You can talk back. It's good. That you feel welcomed. I hope that wherever you are in your spiritual journey, like the rest of us, that you find yourself taking a step forward in your faith. And for those who are watching online, I know it's been up and up. It seems like each week kids are getting sick, and so people are taking the opportunity to watch from home. So, you know, we want to welcome you too if you're watching online. You know, last week for me was very refreshing having Becky, our CB Kids director, delivering the message. I know many of you were very encouraged, you were challenged, but it was refreshing for me for another reason. And the real refreshment came in that I wasn't doing all the prep work that goes into each one of these that week. And so to be able to sit back and be like, oh, all right, I get to do the fun things like preparing for an annual meeting, because that's the exciting stuff of working with the church. And so, you know, I spent some time kind of going through that, but you know, this week kind of was sitting in the back of my mind. I knew what we were going to be talking about. So I was reading, I was studying. And, you know, we have a preaching team here that we all kind of develop these series together. And so, you know, someone who helps out with that and kind of knows where we're going called me up and they said, hey, Jimmy, I just saw a great movie you should go see. It'll really help you as you're getting ready and you're thinking. And I thought to myself, well, if it's for research, I mean, it is Thursday. I should probably go in the middle of the day for research purposes to the movies. And so, like a good boss, I called Will. I don't call Will. Will doesn't answer if you call him, so you have to text him. And so I texted Will, and I said, Will, I'm going to the movies for research. Do you want to come? And his response was a little too quick. Yeah! What movie? Like, it didn't matter. We were just, it was the movie. So, you know, we went up, and when we pulled into Cherry Hill AMC, it was about 12:30 in the afternoon, and there were two cars in the parking lot. I thought, what, do people have jobs or something? And so for research purposes and work purposes, I said, well, let's go. We'll go see this movie. And the two cars we saw were the person I bought the ticket from and the person who ripped the ticket. That was it. And so we go, and this movie is not a very popular movie, so they tuck you back in one of those tiny theaters with like 30 seats in it and a screen that I think I've seen bigger in some people's houses in this area that I'm like, wow, I could have rented this. You know, and we sit down, and of course, when two girls go to the movies, you could sit next to each other. When two guys go to the movies, there's a buffer seat with coats. And so we have our buffer seat, we have some snacks, and we're ready to watch the movie. Well, here's the preview.
Our Lord said to them, go ye into the whole world and preach the gospel to every living creature.
Ferreira is lost to us. He denounced God in public and surrendered the faith.
That's not possible. Father Ferreira risked his life to spread our faith all over Japan.
It seems to me that our mission here is more urgent than ever. We must go find Father Ferreira.
This is in your hearts, then, both of you?
Yes.
Then I must trust God has put it down. The moment you set foot in that country, you step into high danger.
Your glory is their suffering.
It's too dangerous.
We asked for this mission.
Praying to silence.
yeah, I don't know that we knew what we were walking into. And I know for some of you, you're like, why are Spider-Man and Kylo Ren trying to save Qui-Gon Jinn? Like, what's the deal? Takes you about 2 or 3 minutes to get over that. Once you do, you know, you're left in a place where you're watching two Jesuit priests in the 1600s travel to Japan to rescue a fellow priest that they fear has denounced his faith publicly. And, you know, I'll just be, it's not a popcorn and soda movie. You might make it about 10 minutes in, and you just wasted your money on popcorn and soda, because it's tough to engage it at that point, you know, your food, because you're so into this movie. And I think we left it about 2.5 hours. It's a longer movie. We left 2.5 hours later, and what I was feeling was the title of the film. You know, I've learned with Will and I, we process differently. So Will, as soon as we step out of that movie, is like, hey, what'd you think? And I was like, whoa. I don't process that way, and so for probably about a good 20, 25 minutes, I was silent. I think he thought I hated him or something. I just was at a place where I couldn't think, I couldn't process, I couldn't speak. And my heart felt very heavy, it was burdened, it was off for days, and I was left unbelievably confused, because the person who suggested this movie knew the title of our series that we're going through now is called Be Happy. And so I'm like, okay, be happy. This will be a good movie. And here I am processing sadness, pain, persecution, and death. It didn't seem to come together for me. How is this supposed to make me happy? It didn't. It made me feel the opposite. It made me be angry. Now, if we were doing a series called Be Angry, I got that series. Like, I could own this series. I'm sure a couple of you were like, yo, I'd take one of those messages. We could do this way better, right? I left that place thinking, that's not our series, though. Our series is Be Happy. Who in the world would ever think that pain, persecution, insults, and lies is going to bring happiness? The list of people who are going to say something like that, I know, is very small. And I'd even wager that few, if any, of our lists, our names would be on that list. To say, this is what I would sign up for, to say, that's going to make me happy. We run from these things. We don't run to them. We make laws, spoken and unspoken, in our personal lives and in our country to keep us from experiencing those things. We call those laws our liberties and our freedoms. We fight for these. We defend these. And that's not a bad thing. I am thankful for those rights and those freedoms. Every day that we could come here, set up church and a school, and celebrate Jesus together. But sometimes I worry that the liberties we claim as rights have hindered our faith more than helped it. So when we think of being happy, we think of a life without the presence of persecution, insults, and lies. But that list of people who would say this would make you happy, I know it includes one name. I know it includes a name who doesn't just say, I believe that you'll find happiness in this, but I will demonstrate this with my life and everything that I do. And in Matthew chapter 5, the Gospel of Matthew, we begin where Jesus says, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you. Blessed are you when people insult you, when they persecute you, and they falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice. And be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way, they persecuted the prophets who were before you. I want to tell you this morning that this passage, these three verses, have haunted me a majority of my life. Because I love clean faith. I like non-confrontation, you know, enjoy persecution. No, thank you. I don't like that. There's nothing enjoyable about that, especially for someone like myself who, you know, a lot of my early childhood was growing up being bullied. And I'm like, invite that? That's going to make me happy, Jesus? I was never happy with that. I never liked that. This morning, though, I want to invite you into my wrestling match in this passage. And there's two things about this verse that I find very interesting before we move into it. And, you know, the first is Jesus up to this point in his life has never, ever experienced persecution. He's not experienced insults and lies. You know, this is early on in his ministry. And what we have with Jesus is he's liked. I mean, he's gone from town to town and city to city, and he's bringing healing to people. When they're sick, he heals them. When they have disease, he heals them. People are coming demon-possessed, and they're freaking out, and he delivers them and brings peace and security into their life. People like Jesus. He hasn't had to deal with a whole lot of persecution and lying and insults yet. He will. His likability is very, very high. And the second thing that we have to pay attention to is where this falls in his Beatitudes, these series of, blessed are you if or when you series that he has in this beginning of Matthew chapter 5. We talked 2 weeks ago about blessed are the peacemakers. You know, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. The blessed are the persecuted follows this. And I don't think it's a mistake, because when we are people of peace, I believe that persecution will come from that. If you were around for that message, I told a very simple story about junior high fights. And you know when they get into it and you want to see them throw down, and all of a sudden that one person steps in to stop it, and you're like, "Aw, no one likes that guy. They're the guy." When we live a life being the guy or the girl, we can expect this. We can expect that this is going to come. Jesus starts out by stating, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness. How did this play out in his life? How does this impact us in 21st century America? I think it's important to understand that persecution, it's going to be expected for people who follow Jesus. And you may be here today and you're searching out your faith and you're like, "I want to discover more about this Jesus person and what he's about." And I want to tell you that today, I promise you, you'll be uncomfortable, because what I'm suggesting is that following Jesus is far more commitment than many of us think. And so if you're like, "Whoa, Jimmy, you're being really strong." I know, but it's worth it. You can't follow Jesus without experiencing or expecting some sort of persecution. His disciples didn't really know this yet, but they were about to get flooded with it. I like the way D.A. Carson, an amazing theologian, it's so simple. Opposition is a normal mark of being a disciple of Jesus. Opposition is a normal mark of being a disciple of Jesus. If you're going to pursue Jesus, you can expect some sort of opposition or frustration or persecution in your life. It will not be smooth sailing. And with the makeup of the crowd, it was very important that Jesus specify what they were going to be persecuted over. Blessed are you when you're persecuted for, and what's the word there? Okay, talk back to me here. Righteousness. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness. Righteousness. Not blessed are those who are persecuted because they're jerks. No, you deserve that. Blessed are those who are persecuted when they get horrible haircuts. No, that was the 80s and the 90s. And I know some of you now are like, "Yeah, but it's cool that it's shaved." For now. It won't be in 5 years. You'll laugh. We all do. Blessed are you when you get persecuted for your clothes styles. That's not what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying, blessed are you. You will be happy when you are persecuted for righteousness. For righteousness. The listeners here, this would have caused them, that word, to think back on all the laws and the commandments they knew as a kid and continued to study in the temple. They would have come up with the list of the right things to do and the things not to do. I mean, don't lie, right? Don't murder. Don't hit on your neighbor's wife. Don't steal. These all make sense, right? I mean, Jesus says, or in the Old Testament, it says this righteous acts. Care for the orphans. Care for the widows. Care for the immigrants and the refugees. All good things. And whether you personally buy into what Jesus is saying here or not, we teach our kids these things too. We tell them that they should use kind words with each other, right? We tell them that they should stick up for people when they're being bullied. We tell them not to steal, not to lie, not to cheat. All very good things. We want these of our children. But for some reason, we find ourselves, as well as I believe Jesus' followers and our children, in situations where not everyone adheres to these guidelines, these laws, or this righteous living. This summer, I found myself on a Friday morning going out to the golf course really early by myself, and I got paired up with three older gentlemen. Now, the average Friday, I like to just walk the golf course. I know for some of you, you're like, that just does not sound enjoyable. I love that. There's something so peaceful for me about having my bag. I walk a couple miles, chase balls into the woods. It's great. And so we're on the first tee, and the other three gentlemen that I'm with are all riding their carts. And one of them comes up to me, the solo, and he says to me after we all tee off on the first tee, and he says, "Hey, Jimmy." "Yes, sir." He says, "When we get off the first green, you could throw your bag on and get on. You don't have to walk. It's not a big deal." Now, he doesn't know that I choose to do this. I can get a cart if I want, but I don't. But what he's offering to me, I'm going to assume is out of genuine care or like convenience. But what he's offering me at that moment is wrong. It's not right. I didn't pay for the privilege of using that cart. And yet here we sit in situations like this all the time where we're encouraged at times at work, take that shortcut. You could say that thing about that person. They are a jerk. Maybe you're in school and you get access to that test before it's supposed to go out. You get the answers for something you know is coming. Or your friend turns to you and said, "Listen, I forgot my homework and I know you did it. Can I borrow yours?" Maybe good intentions, but they're still wrong. And when we choose to stand up and live a life that is righteous, when we choose to stand up and say, "I want to look like Jesus and do what I know is right," I promise you, you'll piss every person off around you. You just will. It's going to happen. They're going to be frustrated with you. They're going to stop and say, "Well, it's not that big of a deal. It's just homework. It's just a cart. It's just a couple numbers on a spreadsheet." I get it. But Jesus says, "Blessed are you. You'll be happy when you stand up for doing what's right." But you see, here's the problem. When we stand up for doing what's right, when we stand up for righteousness, we become that guy. That guy that lives a life and everybody's like, "Oh, you don't want to go near them. They're that guy. They don't do that stuff. They're going to make you feel guilty." Why does it make people feel guilty? Because I believe everyone is created in the image of God, and we have the Holy Spirit in us that convicts us when something is going wrong. And you know it, and I know it, because we feel that thing, you know, that like, this kind of makes me want to throw up, but I'm going to do it anyway. Yeah, that's the Holy Spirit in us. And he's saying, "This isn't ideal for you. I have something better for you." And when we choose to say, "I'm going to obey that and stand up for what's right," the people around us that choose not to, which is us a majority of the time, but those people stop and look and go, "Oh, you make me uncomfortable. I don't like that." And it makes me wonder, Jesus, how is this supposed to make me happy? This doesn't sound enjoyable. I hate this idea. And that's why he follows it up in verses 10 and 11, or 11 and 12. "Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil." Oh, this gets better. Thanks for making it personal. You just took persecution and you elaborated on it. "Oh, when they falsely say all kinds of evil against you." Why? "Because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who are before you." Jesus just added to persecution for us. He defines it, this malicious lying, these insults. But it's not for just any reason. It's for a very specific reason. When we are insulted or lied about because of Jesus, that's when we can be happy. Again, I'm wrestling. God, this doesn't make sense to me. How will I find happiness in this? That's pain, and I don't want it. And it's this part in verse 12. Why? For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. What Jesus says here, for me, is reassuring. And this has helped me and given me a framework to understand a little bit about how to be happy through persecution. You know, many in the crowd here, they would have been listening, and from a Jewish background, they would have context of prophets or heroes, these men and women of their faith that they would say, I wish that I could be like that. Or when you're training your kid when they're young and you're like, you tell them the stories about these heroes. I'm sure there's many parents who stopped and said, you know, when a kid said, I can't do it, they said, you can. And remember the story of Noah? Do you remember when God said it was going to rain and it never rained before, but he wanted them to build a boat? You can do this. You can, and to use the story of Noah to inspire them. Maybe they told him of Abraham and said, you remember the guy who God said, this great father of our nation, I want you to leave what's comfortable in this normal home that you've got and go somewhere, and I won't tell you where it is. Will you go? And you remember Abraham went. We can have faith and we can trust God. Maybe they talked about Joseph. Joseph, this prince of Egypt. One day they're going to make cartoons about this guy, and in the future, people will watch him. You know, no, you remember, he saved Israel, his family, when they were going to starve to death. God used him. Maybe they told stories about Moses. I mean, Moses, maybe one day, Junior, you'll have the faith and be a prophet like Moses, who heard from God and told everyone what to do. He prepped them for taking over the promised land. He got them out of Egypt and rescued them. Maybe it's Rahab the brave, who stood up in a city and said, I'll hide the slaves, or I'll hide the spies. I'll hide the people who come in here because I believe that there's a God that's greater than my city. And if I protect these spies, God will save me. And maybe they told their kids, you could be bold like Rahab. Maybe it was King David. The king, a man after God's own heart, the best king of Israel, a man who played wildly and worshiped wildly with music, a man who was a giant slayer, who killed tens of thousands in every battle. He went after and protected this nation. You know what? I want you to be like King David. Maybe it was Queen Esther who stood up for a nation when they were about to be completely annihilated, when the king said, we should wipe out every Jew in this nation, and I'll sign off on it. And instead, she put her life on the line and stood up. These are the names that would have been going through their head. These are the prophets, the heroes. These are the men and women that they would have longed to have been like, who were held up as examples to follow of righteous living. You can go into Hebrews chapter 11, and there's a list of these people. That is absolutely amazing. But do you know what they all had in common? Something we don't like to talk about. Something we don't want in our life. And they all had to deal with persecution, with venomous lies and insults of being told about them. They were pursued by enemies who absolutely hated them and wanted them dead. Why? Because they pursued a life of righteousness, a life dedicated to pleasing God and following his commandments. When Jesus proclaims that we will be happy when we're persecuted, it's not because it hurts. It's not because it's painful. But it's because we can identify with heroes of our faith in ways that we never would be able to before. When we're persecuted, we can't expect to say to people, you should be like these heroes, but just in their successes, not in the hard things, just when it's easy, just when it's successful and clean. Jesus himself would embrace this life. I mean, this guy was lied about time after time, insulted to his face behind his back. He was put in situations where they were intentionally trying to get him to fail. Jesus was falsely arrested, put under trial, for a crime he did not commit, murdered in the worst possible way. Why? Because he stood up for what was right. He stood up for godly principles and said, I will not back down from these things. I'm not going to be a jerk. But when we're doing what's right, we won't have to be. It will frustrate people around us. It just will. The world rejected the prophets. So why would they treat Jesus any different? Why would they treat his disciples any different? We know from church history that, you know, outside of Judas who took his own life and John who died of old age on Patmos, that the other 10 disciples of Jesus who were sitting in the crowd when he says, blessed are you when you're persecuted, when they insult you, when they lie about you, when they come after you, you'll be happy and blessed because you'll understand me more. They didn't get it then, but we know those 10. When they went around the world to try to share this great news of Jesus, demonstrate a life, righteous life, were violently martyred. Spears impaling them, crucified upside down, beheadings, skinned alive. Like, Jimmy, that's kind of gross for a Sunday morning. I get it. But we never talk about these things. We don't ever bring them up because I believe that when we look at church history, we don't want to talk about those things because they make us uncomfortable. And we choose to celebrate the stories that end pretty, that end in victory. And we miss the ones that are going to shape us the most because they kind of make us uncomfortable. When we look at church history, we see that most have experienced persecution on some level. So where does that leave us today? We've got to recognize that if we commit our lives to Jesus, if I commit my life to Jesus, I can expect persecution in some way, in some shape, in some form in my life. I shouldn't be surprised when it's there, and I should not run from it because Jesus did not. Dietrich Bonhoeffer is an amazing a German pastor who was pastoring during World War II. And anybody familiar with the story of Dietrich Bonhoeffer? Okay, a handful of you. This was a man who was put in one of the most awkward positions ever. Pastoring while a nation was trying to annihilate, while his nation was trying to annihilate another one, completely wipe them out. And Bonhoeffer found himself in a place where he was persecuted and ultimately murdered for his faith and standing up for righteousness. And in his book, The Cost of Discipleship, he wrote this. Discipleship means allegiance to the suffering Christ, and it is therefore not at all surprising that Christians should be called upon to suffer. In fact, this blows my mind. In fact, it is a joy and a token of his grace. I've read his story. I've listened to his sermons and read them. This was a man who stood up for the well-being of the Jewish nation. Not like he's like, we need to protect the Christian nation. No, he's like, I'm going to fight for someone who believes something different than I believe because this is what's right. And he stood up for the Jewish nation. Even in a time when this nation, these Jews were fleeing their country, trying to get to any other country they could, and so many countries turned them away, ours included. And how many thousands died? And Bonhoeffer says, this isn't right. And he lives a righteous life, standing up to Adolf Hitler saying, this is wrong. Yeah, that's not going to end well. And it didn't. He was murdered at the request of Hitler, a couple weeks before the Allies came and rescued the concentration camp that he was in. All he had to do was identify himself with Jesus, and the pain was coming. Because the more dark the nation, the brighter Christians will stand out, and the more persecution that will come. And he's so clear. It's not just about experience suffering, but that's the joy. That's the token of his grace. And I don't know that we understand that in the USA today. If I'm being honest, and I know this might make some very uncomfortable, but I have been plagued with this in prayer all week, and it kept me up into the wee hours of the morning last night. Sometimes I think that as disciples of Jesus in the United States, we believe that we are better than those who have come before us. We continue to chant and praise that America is number one, we are the best, and I love our country, and we have progressed in so many ways that I am thankful for. The education that I have received and my kids get, I am so thankful for that. The freedom to worship like we do, the economic powerhouse that we can be at times to drive the world. This is amazing. Technology has progressed so quickly. I love that we get that stuff. I hate our phones, but I love a lot of this other stuff. I love our country, but I worry. I genuinely worry that when it comes to our faith in Jesus Christ, I wonder if we have applied the same prideful and arrogant attitude to it. I worry that we might believe that somehow we've come up with a better version of Christianity, one that doesn't involve suffering or persecution or pain. We fight for laws and rights so that our faith can stay protected, clean, easy. And sometimes I feel like being a Christian is about being sanitized and germ-free. And when something comes at us that makes us feel uncomfortable, we look for the spiritual antibacterial like stuff and coat ourselves in it, thinking, now I'm better. Now I'm safer because I'm not dirty and this is easy. Because when it starts to get dirty and people threaten to take away our freedoms, we go nuts. But all the while, few are standing up for life. Few are standing up for orphans and children with special needs. Few are standing up for widows and the plethora of single parents who are scraping through every day. Few are standing up for immigrants and refugees. And none of this looks like Jesus to me. None of it looks like Jesus to me. It looks safe. It looks calculated because we don't want to be persecuted because it will not make us happy. And I'm telling you, it's uncomfortable to say that because I see you looking at me going, well, that's not what I wanted to hear this morning. It's not what I want to hear either. But we don't have a choice because if we are unashamedly biblical, if Jesus says it, we say it. That's where we are. This is what being a Christian is about. Our time and our energy cannot be spent on making sure our faith is convenient for us, but instead we do everything to live a life of righteousness and expect persecution to come. Remember that Jesus didn't have to go out of his way to find it, so I don't want you to hear now, well, I should stand up for everything and be a jerk about Jesus and be like, yeah, y'all stink everywhere. Like, U.S., you stink. No. That's not it at all. That's not it at all. Please don't hear that. I am not asking you to beg signs and run in front of people and stand outside of whatever it is and put that in people's faces and yell at them about how much they stink. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you live a life that looks like Jesus. You stand up for what he stood up for. You won't have to worry about who you're going to frustrate. They'll find you. I promise. They will find you. Because everybody hates something, and everyone wants the evil that we all do. I mean, there's certain things when someone says it, maybe what I'm saying now frustrates you because you're like, I like convenience, and you're frustrating me, and I'm going to tell you after. I expect persecution to come after this. And I understand that persecution comes inside and outside the church because we've become too comfortable. We've become complacent and happy because it's clean. That's not faith. That's safety and false security. What I'm suggesting this morning is to let our lives look like Jesus. Every attitude, every interaction, every decision. That means letting our life be defined by love in a world that is bent on hate. That means trying to assume the best of people and not assuming the worst all the time. I don't know about you. But I know for me, I want to be known when this is all done. When my life comes to an end, I pray that people would say, do you remember Jimmy? That guy loved fiercely. That guy didn't just say he likes Jesus, but his whole life, his time, his money, his energy, everything he did revolved around looking like Jesus and loving people like that. If that's what's said about me when I die, whenever that is, I'm okay with that. I fear, though, that there are parts of my life where people will say he backed down because it was hard and he was scared and he chose not to act because persecution would come. I'm ashamed of those areas in my life. They exist and it hurts. But part of looking like Jesus is inviting him into that. And so this morning, I'm not asking you to reorient your whole life and change everything right now. I'm asking, what are the areas of your life that you take for granted? What are the liberties that you claim as rights that you say, I will fight for that more than I will fight for the life of unborn children? I'm going to fight for that. I'll go down fighting for that. I'll go down fighting to get people safety and security that need it. I'll go down fighting for these things because Jesus went down fighting for these things. I'll go down fighting against whomever it is to know that every person who walks into this church is loved regardless of where they are, what they look like, smell like, talk like. I don't care. We'll battle over that because that's what Jesus did. What's the area of your life that maybe you've just stopped fighting because it's uncomfortable now? I want to be part of a church that loves like Jesus, that is fierce, not safe. If you're looking for safe, the future of Crossbridge might not be for you. I love you and will help you find a church that's safe, but I don't know that Crossbridge is that place. We will love deeply through the uncomfortable, and when, not if, persecution comes our way, we'll be happy because we've stood for Jesus, not bowed down to uncomfortable. Will you pray with me as our music team comes back up? God, I confess to you this morning that I left a theater in a funk on last Thursday. I still feel that. God, I thank you for meeting me in my times of silence, solitude, that through your scriptures you have soberly reminded me how much of a mess I am and desperately need you, and therefore I can love people around me because they need you as well. God, I say this morning I'm scared of persecution because it's uncomfortable and I don't like it. And I know that there are some here this morning who are just ticked. God, I pray that in that, you met people all over who are frustrated at you. And I pray that what we feel this morning would be geared towards what you're doing right now. That your Holy Spirit would speak to us in ways to confirm a boldness in some areas and say, I'm going to fight for that stuff. I'm going to stand up for that stuff. I'm going to go love the unlovable. God, I pray for students in this room right now. I have this impression that they have friends who are being bullied so bad and they have cowered in a corner in fear of what it means for them. I pray a boldness and an intensity over our junior hires, our high schoolers, our college-age students, even our elementary kids over in CB Kids. I pray a boldness over those kids that they would stand up, and in doing so, people would say, why would you do that? And they could say, because Jesus did it. I pray a boldness over us as adults that we would lead the way for our kids, standing up for what is righteous, not being jerks for jerk's sake, but being loving and bold for Jesus' sake, that your kingdom would come and your will would be done, and we would be happy in that. In Jesus' name, amen.